Did you guys know that the beehive was invented here? The modern beehive was invented in Greenfield. A man named Langstroth lived in Greenfield and invented the removable frame beehive. The way everybody keeps bees is because of what this guy invented here in Greenfield.
That, tap and die? Come on, that's great. Greenfield's rules.
I think this is amazing. Think about this. In this little valley, we got basketball invented, spread all over the world. We got volleyball invented, spread all over the world. Now, and we got the Langstroth beehive spread all over the world. So what I want to know is, why don't we have a beekeeping hall of fame in Greenfield?
We have a bee right? ball hall of fame in Springfield.
Right. So
I think it's important to dream big, and I don't see why that can't happen.
That's right.
I just think it's pretty cool to be running a bee place here where that was invented, you know.
Time for our local hero spotlight with Phil Corman from CESA, the local hero, folks. And Matt Gerton, owner of Maggie's Farm and Apiary in Greenfield. First question, Matt, is the Maggie's Farm a reference to the Bob Dylan song, Maggie's Farm?
No, just a special person who inspired me to do all this.
Oh, so. And second question goes to you, Phil. Are you recuperated from pulling my shopping cart 26 miles on the march for the food bank last Tuesday?
I have, but I find myself avoiding all shopping carts.
Me too. And even some parts of the route that I go by, I get like a shudder, like a little PTSD. Now, Matt, you have been spending time with, I don't want to play favorites, but one of my favorite beekeepers in the valley.
Yes.
Dan Conlin from Warm Colors Apiary in South Deerfield. And is Dan your beekeeping mentor at Maggie's Farm and Apiary?
Yes. Dan's really taught me everything I know. I'm blessed to have worked for him for a few years, and we've moved into a partnership. Very, very fortunate.
And I know that Dan, in his beekeeping style, is colluding with the Russians. Can you explain how that works in regards to the honey that comes from Dan's bees and your bees?
Yeah, well, Dan's introduced me to this pretty special world of the Russian bees. You know, these little Varroa mites, these parasites on bees, they almost destroyed the beekeeping industry. And so beekeepers searched all over the world for a special bee that could be resistant to these parasites, and they found the Russian bees. And great effort was made to bring the bees over here in the early 90s. And Dan's a part of that group that's kept that going. They're the only bees that are tested genetically against that group that came over originally. So we're all really trying to keep those bees genetically diverse as when they first arrived, because it seems like it really helps them survive.
Well, maybe it's because I've been watching the Beatles documentary, but I'm really glad that we're back in the USSR, because the Russian bees can let it be when it comes to bees and honey.
Matt, maybe you could share a little bit about the kind of honey you grow and the varieties.
Do you call it growing honey, or do you call it throwing up honey? Because isn't that really what the bees do?
Yeah, you hear it. People, it's, you know, they're like a lot of different fields. There's a lot of different vocabulary specific to it. You know, it can be sort of amusing. But yeah, the bees, what we do that's a little different is we keep the honey separate from each place where it's made by the bees. For example, you know, you can only keep so many beehives in one spot because there's only so much food there. Those bees are surrounded by a certain kind of plants, and those plants are going to produce a certain kind of honey. Each place is going to produce a certain flavor and color of honey. And then so we keep those separate, and we don't mix it all together. A lot of bigger operations, they just mix all their honey together just because it's efficient. But of course, then you lose all the varieties that you get from each place that you keep bees. And Dan, of course, has taught me all of this stuff.
And when you taste the different types, you can actually sometimes taste what plants they might have been feeding off of, the bees. Yeah,
it's great that you bring that up, because I'm sure for those of you out there who love wine and all that, you know, you could recognize certain varieties just by taste. Someone wouldn't have to tell you what it is you're drinking. You would know. Dan can take, you know, a little tiny taste of a honey, and he'll know right away what kind of plants are dominating that honey. Each bee yard actually does produce a different flavor each year. Dan's told me he's had customers say, you know, why don't you have that wildflower from last year again? You know, and you just can't duplicate the growing conditions. As anybody who grows a garden knows, right? Every year is different.
And Matt, are you working with orchardists that you're to have some of, are your bees actually helping to pollinate different fruit plants?
Thank you for bringing that up, because I'd like to thank all the people we do business with, including our customers, but especially our farmers, because, you know, we get, Dan has made some amazing apple blossom honey for a long time, and that's from working with you know, like Cold Spring, Outlook up there, You know, there's a lot of great orchards around that, and I'm sorry, just to name a couple, because there's a lot of them who work very cooperatively with beekeepers. The beekeepers benefit with a great crop of apple honey, which is delicious. And, you know, those apple farmers, you know, they have to have that pollinated on a specific day or two, the way those trees open. And, you know, so it's a great relationship. And it goes on throughout the year. You know, then it's, you know, Plainville Farm with Wally there running that with and doing all the squash and the pumpkins and all that stuff, you know, the cucumbers. Again, you know, we benefit just as much as they do because we end up with these great spots to put bees that often produce nice honeys, and they get the service, a better yield on the plants and in return. So we appreciate all the customers that have gotten us to this point, especially our farmers.
Can you walk us through what the seasons are like for a beekeeper?
Yeah, I'm looking forward to my downtime. It's coming up right after the holidays. You know, we get a nice rush of orders with people love giving the beeswax products, candles and such for gifts and the honey. And it gets really busy right up until the holidays. But then we get a nice break in the winter. And then it picks up again with we sell bees in the spring, the certified Russian bees from breeders in the south. We work with Smith Honey Farms in Petal, Mississippi, where I used to work for a little while. And they're a member of that Russian Honeybee Club, and we get our bees from them so we can sell them to people up here early. So that's a big part of our spring is doing the bee sales and getting all our bees out to farms, you know, for pollination, splitting hives so they don't swarm. So the spring is really, really busy. Goes right into about July. July gives us a little break. That's the time when we deal with those mites. We try to treat for the mites and get rid of the parasites because we want to have strong bees for the rest of the summer, because those are the bees that raise your fall bees, which are going to be the winter bees, if that makes sense.
Are the bees active in winter? Like, are they all sleeping now, or what are they doing?
You know, the bees are absolutely incredible. The more you learn about them, the more amazing it gets. Once it gets cold, they get into a ball, depending on how many bees are there, but they take turns on the outside of the ball, just like the way penguins rotate, you know, down in the Antarctic, right? Spend time on the outside of the circle and move back in. And they actually maintain inside that ball 85 degrees throughout the entire winter.
It's crazy.
Even when the wind is blowing, like, you know how it does, and they just use their bodies, basically in a simple way, they just shiver to produce heat. And that's how they maintain that 85 degrees. And they usually go through about, you know, 40 pounds of honey for energy to do that throughout the winter. So you got to make sure that the bees have plenty of honey on this time of year so that they're not going to starve trying to just stay warm. So to finish off the year, we try to get our bees real healthy in the middle of summer so that the bees going into fall are very strong, so that we have a good chance of surviving winter. And that moves us into the honey harvest season. That's really when we're doing a lot of heavy work, because honey weighs about 1.5 times as much as water. So when you're lifting a big box off a hive, it's going to weigh 80 pounds. You know, it's a good workout all day. And so, yeah, so the fall is about harvesting honey in the wax. And then we get into that heavy sales rush, you know, and that takes us back to that post-holiday break again. So, yeah, so that's sort of the cyclical nature of beekeeping. You get this break. And I laugh because when I taught for 22 years, and I used to have the summers off to think about what I could do better. And now I have the winters off to think about what I can do better. So I still get to enjoy that little break.
I hear tell Matt Gerton of Maggie's Farm and Apiary in Greenfield that you were a teacher, you said, but this is like a third career. Is that true?
Yeah, it might be a fourth. That's a little scary to think about that, but yeah.
What were the other ones? Teacher?
I started as an archaeologist as a young guy.
Whoa.
I always loved digging in the dirt.
Are you Indiana Jones?
Nothing shocks me. I'm a scientist.
You know, I tried to be. I really did. but, you know, the reality, of course, was very different.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the money wasn't very good. And when you dig a site, it runs out. You know, there's only so much to dig.
Right.
So I was always looking for another job right when I'd get a job, which is a hard way to live. I had done trades work growing up. I fell back into that and did construction work. So that was like my second career. I worked for flooring companies and construction companies and such. But then I just realized, you know, I need something a little more stable. My son came into the world. One winter, I took a job teaching a kid with with Down syndrome, and I just loved the teaching part and fell into it. And I started as a special ed teacher and ended up as an AP science teacher.
Amazing.
But I just, you know, so many issues now. It's a tough job to keep going with. And I just felt like it was time for me to change. You know, it was time to reinvent myself again. So I just always wanted to do something in agriculture. And I just got lucky to fall in with Dan. It wasn't intentional. I just wanted to learn some more about taking care of bees. And I volunteered over there a couple times. And then Dan asked me to work for him. So I really only had about 3 weeks off between teaching and working for Dan. You know, when I quit, I was really nervous, not knowing what I was going to do. But, you know, life just happens, right? And I, before I knew it, I was working for Dan, and things have just been rolling ever since. So
Matt, how do people get your honey?
We would love to thank all our customers who have been buying honey from Foster's Market, from Catamount Traders, from Hager's Market, from McCusker's Market, from the new co-op market in East Hampton. Our candles are at Natural Roots in Conway. And please excuse me if I'm forgetting anybody. Main Street Bar and Grill actually had us during the Bee Fest. They sold some of our products and used our honey in their barbecue sauce. And, you know, just to everybody out there, the businesses, the farmers, we want to thank you all for getting us to the point where we are, where we're, you know, we really hope to make this a profitable business and to stay in the area. And we really appreciate all the support.
And think, if you've got a Bob Dylan fan on your list, what would be cooler than getting like a holiday gift of honey that, you know, says Maggie's Farm on it?
You know, I'm so glad you brought that up, because a gentleman stopped by here the other day and told me that that song was written in Leiden, just up the road from our farm.
What? I'll have to yeah, see if that's historically accurate.
I was told he came out here in 1964 and spent a summer in Leiden and wrote that song up there, just 5 miles away from where we are. So I would love to know if that's true.
I'm looking up Bob Dylan in Leiden, Mass. I'm not seeing a whole lot of stuff.
No.
Yeah.
No supporting evidence.
I'll keep looking. Matt Curtin, who's the owner of Maggie's Farm and Apiary based in Greenfield, and Phil Corman from CISA, the local hero, folks. You can find out about all our local heroes at buylocalfood.org.